All right, shit shows. Did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common nutritional gaps? It affects 1 in 3 adults, and especially women. It often shows up as fatigue, brain fog, weakness, brittle nails. But the problem is that most people don't realize that low iron may be the cause of these issues. That's why I'm here to tell you about Citerol from Pharma Nutra. This is a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while also avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea, constipation, and all that fun stuff. It is clinically proven to be comparable to IV iron and is formulated with just 2 ingredients, iron and vitamin C. It's vegan, allergen-free, gluten-free. You can take it anytime, anywhere. So if you're that 1 out of 3 with an iron deficiency, head to pharmanutra-us.com and use code adultchild for 10% off your first order. That is pharmanutra-us.com, promo code adultchild for 10% off today. All right, Shisha, so I have been talking to you about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormonal levels with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide, with 98% of them saying they would recommend it to somebody else. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their probiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating and gas, reduce sugar cravings. It helps you feel satisfied longer, boost your energy. It helps to relieve occasional gas and bloating, reduce sugar cravings, keeps you feeling satisfied longer, boost your energy, and helps you stabilize those damn mood swings. And because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so you can feel like yourself again. And so I struggle with brain fog. I'm sure many of y'all can relate. And since I've been taking the prebiotic collagen protein, I've noticed a big difference there, as well as just a lift in my overall energy levels. Happy Mammoth is dedicated to making women's lives easier, and that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows, folks. So right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and Hormone Harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order today with code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That is happymammoth.com. Use code ADULTCHILD to get 15% off today.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Welcome back to Shit Show Saturday, folks. How are we doing? So today, we're doing something a little different. I'm letting you all take a peek inside one of our sub-communities that we have here on the Shit Show ship. This is the Employment Struggle Sesh. So this is a group that meets every other Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and it is a space where folks can talk about anything and everything job-related. So whether that's you're looking for work, you're struggling at your current job, or you're just trying to figure out how the hell all of this childhood stuff shows up at the workplace, because let's be real, it definitely does. I mean, work is such a huge part of our lives. We spend more time there than anywhere else. And it is one of those areas where our patterns, our coping skills, complex PTSD just loves to make an appearance, right? Whether that's through people pleasing and approval seeking, self-sabotage and procrastination like myself, overfunctioning, underfunctioning, maybe it's repetition compulsion. You keep finding yourself with a boss who is reminiscent of one of your toxic parents, or you keep finding yourself in the same toxic work environment. It's the same environment, but just a different company name. And so this is the place where you can come and vent and get advice and give support on all of this shit. So if you feel like you can relate to some of those issues that I just named, and I know you can, and you don't feel like you have anyone in your life who gets it, or you don't have a safe place to come and speak about this stuff, well then damn the join already, okay? Damn the join. We are waiting for you. So I sat down with some of the members of the Employment Struggle Sesh to ask them some questions and hear their stories. So let's get on with the damn show, shall we?
Well, thanks for joining and doing this. And I have a bunch of questions, but I thought where we could start is, you know, where you're currently at. So whether that's working in between jobs, taking a break.
I can start. I'm not working. I haven't been working for over a year, let's say. That's the biggest source of my shame, I would say, overall in the trauma healing journey. So just in the last 2 months, I have finally gotten to a place of state of mind where I understood that I don't have to follow the logical steps of I have to get a job before I can move forward in any other area of my life. I was allowing that to really contribute to the stuckness that I was feeling from not working. So I would say that at the moment, because I have found a way to kind of circumvent that problem and move on to tackle the next, what I perceived as roadblock in my life, I'm feeling pretty good about it because I'm kind of in that space of like, oh, wow, I realize I have control over this and I don't have to do it in the regular prescribed order. I can do this in the order that works for me. But it's taken me well over a year to get to that place. And I think I really only feel the lack of shame kind of in these safe spaces for the most part. I think I still externally still really struggle with that reality. But I'm going to accept the growth where I see it. And I'm going to revel in the fact that right now I don't feel shame about that because I feel like I've taken some ownership in how I can reprioritize where I need to focus right now.
I'll go. I am currently in between jobs. My old job was in corporate America. I worked at a law firm, a couple different roles at the same place with different managers. And I've since really recently left that job and really haven't received any of the external confirmations or affirmations that I thought I would receive. Like, no, basically no one's talking to me. And at first it kind of had me weirded out, but I talked to my therapist about it and to my husband about it. And, you know, basically they both said the same thing, which is who cares? You don't, you know, need that from them. You have that for yourself. You know that you're doing the right thing, taking the right steps, making the right changes. So that was, I mean, nice to hear from them both, but at the same time, it makes me feel, you know, just a little sad that like I didn't warrant any additional conversations regarding my change, or like, I don't even think people really know what new job I have. I kind of let it all be on my partner, you know, and saying that you got a job overseas and we're moving, the end. So I think it's just like a fake story or narrative in my head that I kind of wish would still play out. But at the same time, I don't really need to explain myself to anyone or kind of justify why I'm leaving.
I'll go. So currently I am self-employed as a sole trader, as I have been for about 10 years. And when I say it like that, it sounds really liberating and like I've been very successful. My nervous system doesn't feel that. The work that I do is working as a pet sitter and dog walker. And this year, because the pet sitting work wasn't bringing in a lot of revenue, I branched out into kind of being an odd job guy. So doing bits of gardening, helping people with home renovations, like house and barn clearance and stuff like that. And I know the reason that I'm self-employed and the reason that I'm a sole trader is entirely down to me trying to regulate my nervous system and to to not trigger myself. I used to work in corporate environments and I was always miserable and I was always feeling like I was in a triggered state of existence. I love what I do. I think it really suits my character, especially the pet sitting work, because I love animals. I would say the only downside of it is the constant financial insecurity worries. The nature of the work that I do means that I don't have a lot of work booked in for like months in advance, months ahead. It's all kind of just on a week by week basis. And if I don't have jobs booked in at the start of the week, I panic and I start catastrophizing and I start thinking that all the work has dried up and I'm going to run out of money and I need something else to do. So I see both the benefits and the downsides of what I'm doing. My other worry is about the future. I don't feel like the work that I'm doing right now is a financially wise decision, but I feel like it's all my nervous system can cope with at this period in my life. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. We'll see then. At the moment, I'm just kind of living day by day. So that's where I'm at the moment.
I can share. First, thank you guys for support. This is one of the subgroups that we do have in supporting me in that transition of things, because we have sat here and we've shared, and one of the biggest fears that I had was transition, financial stability, and having just shifted jobs. It's so strange for me because I am one of those that like have to have a job, have to have a structure. And I didn't ask the pertinent questions that were necessary that I needed to ask. And so in transitioning, it's been one of those things. It has been triggering over the last week or so. The financial aspect of it, of waking up last week in a full rage panic attack because I only had a $150 paycheck, and didn't ask how truly it was on the pay schedule, and shifting ideology from having a structured schedule. And that's been the hardest transition here. And I shifted from doing customer service in a very niche market to a larger competitive market. And I'm having to adapt. And that's been the different thing. Like, I am very, very good at selling the information that I have, but I also have to learn to deal with the rejection portion of it, because a lot of people do not want you soliciting at their door. So those are the challenges that I'm facing now. And it is real. It is difficult. It's actually started to affect some of my relationships personally with the people in my life, because I'm freezing and, I'm trying to figure out where money's coming. But where in the past, my childhood things would have been like, fuck it. I'm not going to make it here. I'm tired of getting rejected. It's been 6 weeks and like nothing's working the way that I want. Tuck my tail and go back to the system that's comfortable. I've been able to kind of buck some of those feelings and accept that I jumped in feet forward, not head first. I looked at the situations. I did have some conversations and I just didn't ask enough questions. So now going back and going, guys, I'm sorry I put like my emotional things on the strains of our friendship and our relationships. It's allowing me to communicate that way. So, these are all of the things where it does reflect back into childhood issues and the things imprinted in me. And then where like my internal fears of change took me over the last 20 years of saying I had to stay in this job. And I have a lot of gratitude for the people in this group because, have been extremely supportive in it.
So I'm currently unemployed. I was laid off in May. So I've been actively looking for a full-time job. I've been interviewing since June and I have not had a single job offer. So it has been very challenging for me. A lot of different things, are getting activated. But one of the things that I've been working on is feeling safe in my work environment. It's something that I have not had. I've been working for like 25 years, and deep down, there's always been this feeling of, I'm going to get fired, so I have to do all these things so that I don't lose my job, like don't speak up or perform or whatever. But this last work environment, it was the worst of my dysfunctional work environments. But at the same time, it was, one of the best experiences also. In April, when I did the Breathe to Heal, it was kind of like my first attempt at like feeling my body and where are these things hitting me in this dysfunctional work environment. And even now, you know, that I'm going through all these rejections and just like struggling, but I know that there's something for me to gain from it, to understand where my healing journey is. So I've started doing like the IFS groups with Jesse, and those have been really good to me too, to try and understand the different pieces of me. And last week, I kind of had like a little breakdown, and I shared on the chat that I was feeling like such a failure. I had an interview, and I didn't know how to answer the questions, and I could start feeling my face getting numb, you know, as the interview is going on, and she's asking me these different questions, and you know, I didn't have the answer, and feeling so unprepared, and it was like such an awful feeling. And I struggled Thursday and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just feeling it. But then Monday came around and my mindset was like, I'm not going to give up. I know there's something out there for me. And then yesterday in the meeting that we had at 10, you shared about the Tim Fletcher YouTube video, and I went and watched it. And what I heard was how important hope was. And I know that that has gotten me out of, you know, some of my other challenges that I've had through life. And it made me feel good to know that it's going to do the same in this situation that I'm in right now, you know, trying to find a full-time job and, you know, feeling the financial security again and, you know, part of a team, contributing, doing something meaningful. So I'm going to get through it.
I'm just going to throw out another question for anybody to answer. Where you've seen your childhood show up in work, whether that is through perfectionism and people pleasing, maybe it's under functioning and self-sabotage, maybe it's repetition compulsion of always having a boss that's representative of your mom or your dad, just wherever this shit has shown up for you. Go ahead, Terry.
For me, it shows up largely in the laundry list trait of fear of authority. I feel like when I used to work in the sort of corporate world, I always had so much fear of the people who were above me, and felt like they were constantly looking for me to fail, constantly looking to criticize me, and could pull the rug underneath my feet at any moment and get rid of me. And in most areas of my life, I've always said that I'm more of a fighter and a flighter. But when it came to the workplace is where I saw my fawn and freeze response come in. I cannot show my best self in job interviews. And so many of the jobs that I have got in my sort of salaried work was because I moved to a new city. I went to a temping agency. They put me in a company and I just kind of proved myself while on the job. And then they eventually kind of created a role for me. I think I've only ever got one job in my life through the interview process. And that was mostly because I had a friend who already worked in that company who put in a good word for me. I panic in the interview process and I forget everything that I'm good at. I forget how to construct sentences. I sweat. I get really self-conscious and I just feel like the person interviewing me is looking for all of the ways that I'm wrong rather than looking for the ways that I'm right. And that entirely comes from being the scapegoat in my family. I was constantly under the spotlight in my family by people who were constantly critical, constantly judgmental, and would take any tiny element of my being or my behavior to shame me. And that's the same shame that I always took in with me to interviews. which is why I'm self-employed now. Because yes, I have clients, and essentially I am interviewed every single time I have a consultation with a new client, but at least I'm in charge of my business. I get to decide who I work with. If I don't like a client, I can kind of not agree to work for them if I get a bad vibe from them. And I determine the culture of my work life now. And I'm a very independently minded person. I have been since I was a child. I guess being a scapegoat, being the outsider in the family, I kind of forged my own personal identity. And that's what I can take into my work as a self-employed person today.
I agree with Terry, the fear of authority. I've changed jobs a couple of times recently. For the majority of my career, I was a dietitian, mostly in the ICU. And it took me a really long time to be comfortable talking to doctors, even if they were residents that were younger than me or things like that, speaking up on rounds. And I never really understood. I just thought, oh, I'm shy, you know. As I got more comfortable and I had, you know, my own unit, I kind of called the shots for, you know, how we were going to feed our patients. I gained confidence, and then I would speak up and kind of tell residents, no, this, you know, that's wrong or whatever. So I don't know if that was just, I became comfortable and that's why I was able to speak up. But in 2020, I changed careers and went back to school to be a surgical tech. And that's actually when I realized that I was an adult child, because I thought, I work with doctors all the time, I'm fine. But it's a whole nother ballgame dealing with surgeons all day long. And I had no boundaries, absolutely no boundaries. If I didn't know that if I needed something extra for a case, or just had questions about like when or how we were going to do something, I would just cross my fingers and hope I knew what to do when it came up, because I didn't want to ask the question. And it was basic parts of my job to ask, because a lot of times the surgeon just assumes that everyone in the room knows what they're going to do. And it's like, sometimes my not asking questions would not be exposed, but when it did, it always exploded into, you know, why didn't you ask this, or why didn't you have this set up, or why didn't you, why do I have to tell you? And holy crap. But I also saw it in myself, as I had no ability to ask for help if I got in the weeds, like setting up for a case. It just wouldn't even dawn on me to like reach out and ask someone like, hey, can you call somebody to help, you know, open the sterile supplies or whatever, or ask the nurse to go get something for me. I think it's just, I was always so, I can do it myself, I can figure it out. And that has been extremely hard for me to turn that around. Now I'm doing something completely out different, dealing with death care. And I work with a team, but I'm my own person, like we work remotely. So that has been another thing where I'll just get really worked up and anxious if something goes wrong, or something happens where I have to call a family back or call a funeral home director back or something. And I cannot stand confrontation and things like that either. So that's why I'm in this group too, just trying to figure out, like, what do I want to be when I grow up? So thanks for listening.
So, you know that voice in your head that is constantly telling you how to be a better partner, be a better parent, be a better worker, be a better version of yourself? Of course you know that voice. And when I need to tell that voice to shut the hell up, Calm is the tool that I reach for to release stress and find space to breathe. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, and it is here to help you feel better. If you're feeling like you could use some support navigating this healing journey, get the relief you need with Calm sessions, like their guided meditations to help you work through anxiety and stress, sleep stories, sleep meditations, and calming music to help you drift off to a restful sleep quickly, grounding exercises, including breath work to help you reset and relax, and expert-led talks to help you handle grief, improve self-esteem, improve your relationships, and more. The Calm app puts the tools you need right in your pocket with over 2 million five-star reviews. So calm your mind, change your life. Calm has an exclusive offer just for listeners of this show. Get 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/adultchild. This is an amazing value. Go to calm.com/adultchild for 40% off and limited access to Calm's entire library, calm.com/adultchild, and make sure you tell Calm you heard about them from me. So shit shows, the holidays sure do sneak up fast, so it's never too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun with it instead of scrambling at the last minute and just finding whatever the hell you can find. And Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Good looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, and because they're made in small batches, the best finds can sell out fast. So I just got a friend of mine a laptop cat scratch. Scratching pad. So it's a scratching pad that looks like a laptop because her cat, like mine, likes to constantly sit on her computer. It's probably not going to help with that problem, but it was hilarious and I had to get it. And then I got for myself, it's called a couch caddy. So confession, I'm constantly losing my phone and the remote in between the couch cushions. And so this is this like beautiful wooden thing that kind of drapes over the arm of the couch. And it has a designated spot where I can put my phone, the remote, a drink. It's the shit. I'm obsessed. And so Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms to dads, kids, teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans to foodies. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else, and I mean it. So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/adultchild. That's uncommongoods.com/adultchild for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. All right, chichos, did you know that scientists now openly say that your gut is the cornerstone of your health? And it's not just about digestion, okay? The gut literally affects everything from your energy levels to mood to weight management and even your longevity. However, an imbalanced microbiome can sneakily sabotage you with constant bloating, sluggish energy, and those stubborn extra pounds that you just can't lose no matter what. But here's the kicker. Fixing your gut bacteria isn't rocket science. It is the game changer for reclaiming your vibe and living your best damn life. And that is where Bioma steps in, delivering powerhouse supplements like their flagship probiotics for killer digestion and weight control, the Feminine Health Symbiotic to keep things balanced down there, and menopause support to crush hot flashes and mood swings. Their science-backed trio of prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics work like a gut reset button, all in vegan, tasteless capsules with a no BS 14-day money-back guarantee so you can try it risk-free, okay? So go to gobioma.com/adultchild today for an extra 15% off your order. That is gobioma.com/adultchild and get an extra 15% off.
So I feel like that a lot of my adult childness, I find it manifesting at work for sure. I'm working right now. I work for myself. So, you know, there's a lot of ebb and flow. And just the questions you're asking in reflection, I think that, you know, I've put a lot of practical tools in place to deal with some of the dysfunction at work, or I guess even just like boundaries and different things over the years. But, you know, really big feelings still come up and big problems. And I think it was probably maybe a year plus ago, in this group, that I was able to connect someone kind of being disappointed in me, or I don't even know if they were disappointed, but there was potential that the email or the text I received was like kind of saying, you weren't perfect or you made a small mistake. And I remember then through this group being able to recognize that as an emotional flashback. Like I felt like I was going to die and it just was like the worst feeling. And I just remember I want to crawl in a hole. I want to quit. This is just like, I can't handle this. So yeah, I think that's been really really helpful to like hear that language and hear other people talk about it. I guess I don't really know like where I'm at, but I know that there is some progress made just from being able to like see it when it's happening and pause and kind of like go a little bit deeper where that's coming from. It's like right now, after a summer of things kind of being slow because I had an injury and going through different divorce stuff, so having childcare issues where work is picking up again. And now I find myself absolutely overcommitted. And it's like this week and next week, I'm just so stressed. And this is a huge problem. Like this is a pattern where I find myself overcommitted. It's gotten better. And that's where I feel like I've put these practical kind of tools in place of like, okay, you know, looking at my calendar, saying no more, but I do question, why do I keep on finding myself here? And I think there is an aspect of people pleasing that, or it feeling really good to say yes to people. And then I think there's also a certain amount of like the scarcity, you know, when sometimes it's slow, I'm like, who am I to say no to something and turn something down? But yeah, I'm just like in this moment, I'm like really feeling so, cranky, annoyed with myself. And yeah, I am like beating myself up. Like, how did you get into this place again? Like you have too much to do. You have too much on your plate. So it's just I don't have the answers right now, but I think just being able to like put it out there and be in the group and just hear other people's experience and share, it definitely helps, because I feel like there is a lot of progress made. And I think my emotional flashbacks when someone is criticizing me or when I make a mistake just aren't as bad. So I'm like, okay, that's actually huge progress, because yeah, I think I definitely suffer a lot from workaholism and perfectionism. And so those ways of coping definitely have gotten better or like have become less. So I think that goes to like doing the work. So yeah, that's my share.
Well, first off, this stuff follows us everywhere. It's in every relationship. It shows up in the workplace. It shows up in friendships. It shows up in romantic relationships. It shows up with relationships with your neighbors or whoever, like people you might not even be that close with. Someone in the grocery store can trigger me to like bring out one of my like, nope, you're wrong, I'm right, move, get out of my way, whatever my little attitude is that day. So at work, we all know that in the past, it's been 2 months, guys, since Nancy got fired from her first job ever. I always had the misconception that if I did all the right things, then I would fly under the radar and no one would ever say no to me if I had a personal issue or throw rules at me or, you know, the values of our company are. I just thought if I did my job perfectly, just like if I walked on the eggshells at home, nobody would point the finger at me. Well, the finger got pointed and I was angry. And I played the victim for a little while, and you guys listened to that. But coming to the realization that it takes two to tango, and I could have handled the situation differently. I also could have, there was choices made that day. And I made the choice to be an adult child, and I got fired. So that's okay, because now I'm at a point where I've had so much time. I've given myself the time, the space to reflect upon that error, understand my way. But honestly, thank God I'm not there anymore. I've come to the conclusion that that might have been the worst job I ever had. So much criticism. And like being a photographer, well, that's my photography. But no, it's not. That photography belonged to my job. So learning to separate my art from their art, that is really like hit me very hard. And I'm like, whoa, that might have been part of my problem. I did start a new job. It's super, super part-time, which is fine for me right now. That job is like this. Come to work, do everything, stand around, do nothing. Then the end of the night comes. And of course, because I grew up in such chaotic dysfunction, I love the chaos at the end of the night at a bar. It is the best thing ever for my inner children. They're like, yay, I can tell all these people, no, you can't bring that drink outside. Nope, time for you to go home. And then we clean and then we all go home. So far, good experience. But I just want to reach out and thank all of you guys for being here every other Wednesday and pointing out to me that I'm not the only one who has these issues at work. So thank you and have a good afternoon.
Does anyone want to speak to what was modeled to you as kids? Like, was it super structured and stable as far as a work environment? Was it chaotic? What were the messages that you received about a career and jobs?
I'm gonna triple dip today. I received literally zero guidance in terms of jobs, careers, job hunting, writing a resume, what to expect from the workplace, what careers were available to me. Absolutely fucking jack shit. I don't even know what my father did for a living. I know what company he worked for. He worked in the oil industry. But in terms of what he actually did, I have no clue. My mother was a stay-at-home wife and mother. I mean, she was a stay-at-home mother, but she didn't do an awful lot of mothering because she was never there. She was emotionally distant and completely uninvolved in my life. I showed interest in things when I was a young teenager. I wanted to be an architect for the longest time. And I used to independently draw designs for houses and hotels and airports and all things that I was familiar with from my childhood. And I used to excitedly want to show my parents these designs that I'd made. And they showed no interest in them whatsoever. Like, occasionally they would look at them, like, but I would know that they weren't actually genuinely interested. They were kind of just going through the routines of it. From the age of 11, I started composing music on the piano and then got into composing music on the computer when I was 15. And I excelled at this, and my teachers at school recognized it, and I was invited to perform my compositions at concerts at the school. My parents didn't bother coming to those concerts. I used to have to ask friends' parents for a lift home, and they would look at me with such pity when they realized that my parents didn't bother coming to watch me perform my pieces. They never showed any interest in me succeeding in life. And I think quite the opposite. I think they wanted to see me fail at life so that I could remain in that scapegoat role, so that I could be the identified loser, the problem in the family. I think I've got three older sisters. One of them is exceptionally academic and has been exceptionally successful professionally. So they've got the kind of shining star, golden child that they can convince themselves that they're responsible for all of her successes. And they wanted me, the scapegoat child, to be the failure so that they could point the finger at me and say, look what a failure he is, and not have to look at themselves. I can't even remember what the question was now. Oh yes, parents, guidance. Yeah, so I know that there are people in this group who would have had parents who were very kind of strict on them getting good grades and knowing what they wanted to do with their lives and guiding them towards that, or pushing them rather towards that. My parents were not that. They were completely disinterested in my life.
So for me, it's the exact opposite. I grew up with workaholism, you know, as representative of what we should, you know, strange. I can remember at a very young age, I mean, from like, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, my grandfather had about 8 or 9 little rental properties that he was the property manager, you know, person for. He would, you know, he owned them. He was also the deacon of a church. He also drove a semi, you know, at night. And so that was my primary example. My father, you know, if he did work, he was working for himself. It was always cash. I didn't really know. He was always a gypsy for the most of my life. So I really reference just what I have with, like, what my mom, you know, has put in front of, which was alcoholism as well. Even through her addiction issues as a kid, she would work to provide for us. And then, you know, just memories of, like, sitting in the van while they're stealing equipment and shit like that to support their drug habit. So, you know, the work imprint is always like, bust your ass, do work. We were digging ditches for backed up sewer lines, bringing in, you know, sheetrock or whatever materials into the houses. You know, my mom was a nurse, so she worked 12-hour shifts. And so it was like 12 on, 12 off, you know, work part-time in between, manage your sobriety. So everything that I've ever learned is to just be a cog in the machine. You know, learn how to do these things, pick up tools, learn how to use them. My grind, you know, general construction stuff, home maintenance things, that's everything. And so nothing was ever given to us as a, like, hope and dream, you know, aspire to be bigger, go to school. You know, it was expected that we were going to get good grades, you know, try not to be a problem. You know, if you're sitting at home doing nothing, you should be doing something. Either go outside and go play and come home when the lights come off. Or if you don't have anybody to play with, guess what? There's dishes to be washed, clothes to be folded, rooms to be vacuumed, you know, lawns to be mowed. So we were always given a production kind of mentality. If you're sitting still, you should be doing something. And that is exactly how I am in my workplace. If I am not moving around, if I don't have direction, like, I feel extremely lost, it's not something that works well with me, of how my organization is. And so I'm having to learn how to redo that, you know, often and frequently now in my new frame of mind and in my new job line.
What was modeled to me and what I came to realize, you know, with this whole situation of, you know, going through this layoff and being unemployed, my dad was the alcoholic. And I do remember as a young child, I don't know, maybe like 6, 7, 8, you know, my mom having to call his work to let him know that, you know, he wasn't going to be, you know, able to go in because he was hungover. I remember the fear of, is he going to lose his job? Like, obviously, who knows what a child thinks, but I remember just feeling scared. And then as I got older, you know, more like into my teens, my dad had this fear that he was going to get fired and everything he had worked for would just be worth nothing. So he lived with that fear. And then when I was 18, they offered him an early retirement. At that time, my dad was only 50 years old and he took it because that was his biggest fear, is that he was going to get fired and have nothing to show for the years that he worked. And it's almost like I realized how I've been living with that fear too, of like, you know, I'm going to get fired if I don't do what they need to do, or, you know, I need to stay quiet, or just, you know, don't say anything. And that sucks. It sucks to live with that. And I really hope for something different for myself.
My dad, we always considered him a workaholic, but he really, I think, just worked normal because my mom worked. She stayed at home or did daycare in our house. So compared to what she was doing, him leaving and driving 40 minutes to the office, you know, 40 minutes home, 5 days a week was working a lot. But my sister and I joke about this all the time. Like, I have a twin sister and my dad's famous line was always, yep, one of them's going to be a lawyer, one of them's going to be a doctor, but nothing was ever done to, like, they wanted us to get good grades, but I'm not really sure why, because neither of them were like great students or anything. So I don't know what the push was to, you know, if we got a B, it was like a huge deal, you know? And I think it was basically for them to like pat themselves on the back, like, oh, we're doing such a good job. You know, they go to conferences and come home and be like, this teacher said this about you. This teacher said this about you. And isn't this so great? They're always telling us that, oh, it's parents like you that we don't need to talk to. And my sister and I would just be like, whatever. But my sister and I both excelled at art, but we were strongly encouraged not to go into that because we'd never make any money. And I've wanted to be a photographer since I was about 7 years old, and I am now, but I wish I would have pursued that in college, but it was not encouraged because it was tied to financial stability or success or whatever.
So what was modeled and expected in my family was perfection and tremendous success. My dad was a narcissist and believed he was perfect and believed that he deserved to be in charge, you know, at home, at work, anywhere he showed up. And that's what he wanted and expected from me in particular. I don't think the expectation was quite the same for my brother, who's younger. But for some reason, I was supposed to be the one who became the big business executive. I was supposed to follow in his footsteps and, you know, emulate myself after what an amazing managerial type style he had. And never once in my life have I been a manager. I've never wanted to. I'm terrified. I mean, you know, going back to the laundry list traits, I'm terrified of authority and angry people. Like, that's my dad in a nutshell. So I've always worked in supportive roles and I've spent many years in the service industry, you know, by choice. So needless to say, I've been a real disappointment in the family. There were several years that I actually worked for kind of a national company that had, you know, some respect to the name. So it was like, even though I wasn't performing at the big boss level, it was still something that he could say with pride, because everything reflects back on the narcissist. You know, everything has to make them look better. But when I went into the other profession that I pursued in the service healthcare wellness industry, that was like not okay with him. That was because what was he going to tell people, you know, now? How is he going to brag on his kid now that she's doing something that's not wearing a suit and heels and yelling at people to get shit done? You know, that's what I was supposed to do. I don't know that you could call that support. You could call that expectations and demands. And of course, you know, with the grades and all of that, it was, you know, if you got an A minus, why wasn't it an A? You know, it was just not, complacency was always an issue. B's were, you know, problematic. You know, nothing was ever good enough. It was always, you always had to be striving for the next thing, for perfection, never rest on your laurels, all that bullshit.
What was modeled for me, which was very similar to what Laura just shared, I really, it was so hard to break that mentality for me. The pandemic actually really helped me do that because, you know, we didn't have to go to work. We were working remotely. And that was when I was still doing events and event planning. It's either right or it's wrong. And attorneys are trained to find mistakes. So I think the amount of change that I've had just within the last like month of not working and being out on leave even this summer has really just driven home the point that like the 9-to-5 isn't for everyone. And you can show up for yourself and you can show up for your family and others in your community without having to have that accolade or striving and killing yourself, almost trying to strive to get the job that is quote unquote the job for you. And for me, I just think now that I've seen the hole in the wall with regards to employment, I can't never make that mistake. I'll never go back to what that was or what I thought it would be, which was, you know, what was modeled to me growing up. But I'm just open to seeing what happens next for me. But I very much needed the break. And I'm so happy that I've had this group to kind of help me navigate everything and just also being a sounding board, you know, in between sessions with my therapist, my thinking in my mind and sharing with my partner. So I just wanted to say thanks for that, because I think it's a group that I really have needed for a very long time. And I'm so thankful that we can all talk to each other every other Wednesday.
I definitely would like to speak to the group, how much the group means just to me personally. I think to those of us who have been coming for quite some time, the ways that our complex trauma shows up in our lives are pretty much too many to number and too many to list. And I think in our society, particularly, employment is an area that people have very little compassion and tolerance for. You not having the standard, you know, minimum 40 hours a week, work yourself to the bone, hustle culture, all that. There's just very, very little wiggle room for how society perceives and what kind of compassion they have. So, and like I say, I know because I carry this shame every day, you know, and it, the ways that it shrinks and limits my life, because I mean, I'm already a bit reclusive, but to go meet new people, what's the first thing someone asks you? So what do? Where do you work? So that right there is a fear that keeps me small and away from people. And it just gradually, it just kind of isolates your whole world because you feel insignificant and unworthy to be out and mingling with the people out there doing it by the right, you know, the right way, so to speak. So I have found that this space in particular, you know, not only does it help us to have more one-on-one time and have a feeling of just a little more safety, you know, with the smaller group, I just think this is such a very particular kind of part of our trauma that a lot of us just are almost too afraid to even look at. So I'm super grateful that we have this dedicated space to focus on how this impacts us all. And I'm grateful to Andrea. You lead by example and you allow other people to step up into these roles. You trust us to step up into these roles and kind of go off on our little small group tangents or whatever. And I have a lot of gratitude for you for allowing us to create this. So
thanks. I really appreciate you running this.